Furthermore, O Bodhisattva ever persevering, if sons and daughters of a virtuous family preserve, recite, explain, or copy this sutra, they will attain the 1200 qualities of the tongue. All that they taste, whether of food or bad flavor, of good or bad flavor, savory or bland, bitter or astringent, will, through their pure faculty of tongue, come to taste just like the heavenly nectar of immortality, and they will find nothing unpleasant. Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Thank you so much for being here, my friends. Thank you for your practice. We are still in chapter 19, and Shakyamuni is extolling this experience of Buddhiness, which defies words. And that's what he was doing from the very get-go. I've referenced the Avatamsaka Sutra. I talk about these terms and more about this in Volume 2 of Buddhism Reference, coming soon. It just keeps growing, especially reading these other translations, because they throw words in there that are, they maybe don't belong in Mahayana, but they still drag them into there. And so just because I want you to be informed, I'll talk about leadership. You know, do I want to do that now? Let's just keep going with this. This hyperbole about the tongue, the nose, the eyes, and so forth. We're going to read some more. But please understand that Buddhiness isn't about becoming a superwoman or a superman or a super whatever. It's simply the fact that our attachments, our cravings, our clingings, our samsaric identification. That's all we know without practicing Buddhism. So it's difficult to understand that that information is corrupt. It's corrupted by the craving and clinging. How many times have you observed somebody else, because it's really hard to observe it in yourself, that you think, boy, she has an unreasonable attachment to that guy or that thing or that habit. Like, for instance, and some of you might get upset with me for saying this, but I've never been an addictive personality, whatever, whether it's my autism or I think we're all autistic to some degree, but anyway. Smokers. Have you ever been a cigarette smoker or vapor, whatever? It's fun. It becomes just a natural thing to do. I don't even want to call it a habit. But strictly speaking, you choose to do something, you can choose not to do something. Oh no, it's an addiction and it affects the body. Okay. We can find justification for anything. I have been a smoker. I didn't smoke 3 packs a day or even 1 pack a day. I smoked occasionally, but I would spend a few weeks or months smoking, and I really liked it. I liked clove cigarettes. I liked menthol cigarettes. I tried, because regular cigarettes just got boring, right? Because I liked the pleasures. I liked the something to do. I even liked the fact that it kept me from finding something else to put in my mouth like food. But if I got my throat started being a little irritated or my allergies would flare up, at first I would smoke because it helped with the allergies, right? It's almost like smoke scratching your soft palate. And I did some justification. Why do you smoke? Well, it helps with my allergies. But, you know, if I wasn't enjoying it anymore, I'd just stop. And then I wouldn't pick up a cigarette for months, years. And eventually I just got tired of it and I stopped. I know. People who think, it's a mindset. And the reason I bring it up isn't to talk about smoking and addiction, but addiction in a way, because our cravings and our clinging are interrelated, right? And that's the situation with our samsaric identification in life. This is what Shakyamuni observed, that is the very cause of our stress and anxiety. How many people do you know? I've been trying to quit smoking for years and years and years. Again, I'm not railing about cigarette smoking or any kind of smoking. What I'm saying is, it's very hard to break ourselves from that mechanism of craving and clinging, the habit energy, yeah? Even harder, or maybe this is the core of it, to admit to ourselves, ugh, silly human, just move on, change your mind. I mean, that's the core of Buddhism. So, you know, sometimes we want to say, well, I don't know why I keep doing this, nothing's changing. Stop telling yourself that. Oh, something's changing. In fact, you should be more keyed into something changing because you think it isn't. Chances are something's changing you're not aware of, and it's requiring more of you to change it. So double down, and you'll be shocked. I don't know how many times I've sat considering, you know, what sutra to read, what I was going to talk about the next day or whatever, or what project I was working on, a piece of furniture or something, and suddenly dawned on me out of nowhere, seemingly, wow, that's not happening in my life anymore. Why isn't, where did that go? When did that stop happening? Trying to figure out, wow, that kind of thing doesn't appear. It's like it vaporized. Oh, that's some karma I didn't even know about or I wasn't aware of. But I'm aware that it changed. The practice is like that. It's not always a, aha, I've finally broken through that. A lot of times it's, my life has changed. And, wow, that's really, that changed a lot of other things. And, things are better. I didn't even realize, yeah? It's often like that. So, when Shakyamuni's talking all this hyperbole, he's trying to use words we're familiar with, about things we're familiar with, like cigarette smoking. And he's giving these qualities as much excitement and amazement as he can muster in words to give you the idea that every single sense experience that we pretty much take for granted. My tongue works. Yeah, I don't think about it when I eat. I think about the sweet, sweet food or the spices, right? But I don't attribute it to qualities of my tongue and my so on and so, and my, you know, scent glands and so on and so forth. What Shakyamuni is trying to explain is that as you purify, this is what we mean by purify your apparatus of sensations, when you shift your mind to perceiving the engine of life, moment to moment to moment to moment to moment, all of the habit energy, the cravings, the clinging, it doesn't even enter your mind to pick up a cigar, a cigarette, or we're going to keep going with that analogy because it fits. The mere thought of, I want a cigarette, doesn't even enter your mind. You've gone so far beyond that experience that you're too busy being amazed at the moment-to-moment process of smelling and breathing and tasting your own saliva and not, without having these distractions, because that's what they are. But in samsara, we are deluded into fooling ourselves that that is essential for us to have pleasure with these sense organs. Follow? Enlightenment is so much more amazing that those thoughts don't even occupy our mind. That's why he's talking about this in this way. Make sense? So let's keep going. If they expound the teaching to the great multitude with their tongues, their voices will be profound and touch the heart. All those in this multitude will be gladdened and pleased. Now, he's just talking about sharing, right? Expounding the Dharma teaching. But he's attributing the eloquence, the conviction, the influence, the inspiring tone to the change in your physical samsaric being by being in Buddhahood. That it actually, the forming your vocal cords, the tongue, your mouth, your breathing, all of it is augmented toward conviction and inspiration to make those other sentient minds aspire to this thing that you yourself are emulating and experiencing. He's just pointing out that enlightenment isn't just an idea in your mind, but where your mind goes, your body follows. Right? That's old. That's old. Remember the old black and white film, is it Metamorphosis? Or Metropolis, Metropolis. Right? Talks about the very same thing. Where the mind goes, the body goes. So that's the idea here. Furthermore, Sakra, Brahma, and the other Devaputras and heavenly maidens, hearing a sequence of their teaching expounded with such profound voices, will all come to hear it. In other words, your truth will resonate with the truth of the entire cosmos. What some would say, you are now in rhythm with the energy of the universe. Well, yes, the engine of life. It's like each one of us is a crest of a little wave. Can you deny that that crest of that little wave is not part of the ocean? The illusion is that we're separate. Samsara. The truth is that it's all the ocean. Right? Dragons, the daughters of Nagas, Yakshas, the daughters of Yakshas, Gandhavaras, the daughters of Gandhavaras, Asuras, the daughters of Asuras, Garudas, the daughters of Garudas, Kimnaras, the daughters of Kimnaras, Mahoragas, and the daughters of Mahoragas, will all approach, respect, and honor them in order to listen to their teaching. Because they're personages. Yes, they translate as dancers and singers and musicians and so forth. But those are qualities of the engine of life, the potential that manifest in our samsaric reality. Yeah? The monks, nuns, laymen and laywomen, kings and princes, ministers and their attendants, and the lesser noble emperors and great noble emperors adorned with the seven treasures, and their thousand princes and their attendants of the inner and outer households will enter the palace and listen to the teaching. You will touch all life because you're speaking this noble, singular truth. And it's affecting your speech, yeah? Since these bodhisattvas expound the teaching skillfully, the Brahmins, householders, and the people of their land will attend and honor such bodhisattvas until the end of their lives. you will radiate this influence throughout your environment, right? It's just another way of saying it. All the Sravakas, Pratyekabuddhas, Bodhisattvas, and Buddhas will always wish to see them. So you're attracting the truth by expounding the truth. How does that not make sense, right? Since these bodhisattvas expound the teaching skillfully, the Brahmin's household, blah, 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 I already read that, wherever this person may be, he will teach the Dharma in the presence of the Buddhas there. He will thus be able to preserve the Buddha Dharma entirely as well as utter the profound word of the Dharma. Whereupon the Buddha, wanting to elaborate on the meaning of this, further spoke in these verses. Such people, through their pure faculty of taste, and he's talking about us practicing correctly, namo myoden geikyo, right? Through our faculty of taste, we'll never taste bad flavors because everything is a moment-to-moment exciting experience. It just is what it is. We don't qualify it, judge it, right? Whatever they eat will all become the nectar of immortality. With their profound, subtle voice, they will teach the Dharma to the great assembly with various explanations and illustrations. Their teachings will touch the hearts of sentient beings. All those who hear them will be gladdened and honor them with the best offerings. All the devas, nagas, yakshas, and asuras will come together and listen with respect to the Dharma. If these expounders of the Dharma want their subtle voice to penetrate throughout the manifold cosmos, it will reach wherever they wish. The great and lesser noble emperors and their household princes in attendance will all come and listen to the Dharma with their palms pressed together and with respectful thoughts. All the devas, nagas, yakshas, rakshasas, and pisakas with joyful minds will also always rejoice to come and honor them. All the devas, such as Brahma, Mara, Ishvara, Mahesvara, will always come to them. All the Buddhas and their disciples, hearing the sound of this teaching, will always remember and protect him, and at times appear in his presence. So I'm going to interrupt this just for a moment, because I got to get this off my chest. I get questions quite often, actually, about certain organizations, how valid they are or invalid they are. Here's the thing. Ultimately, especially in our world today, there's a very corrupted idea of what leadership is. In our world today, I think it's very obvious that leadership is seen as a position of authority. And by that, I mean a leader is supposed to the following things: tell you what to do, tell you what not to do, tell you what how to do, tell you, your payoff for doing things is totally controlled by the leader. The leader decides the direction, decides the method, decides the benefits, all of it, right? And if you're not the leader, then you're quote unquote a follower or a member or an employee or whatever. It's a very hierarchical structure, and it's very well suited, if not spawned, of capitalism. It's always the person at the top that is the figurehead, the voice, the face, the financial reward, the respect, the honor. It all goes to that top of the pyramid. And the further down you go, the more and more you're just being used, really. But that's not the picture of leadership that Nietzsche gives us. Very, very strictly. Nietzsche in number one tells us, you're the only leader. You lead. You need to learn how to lead. And what does that mean? It doesn't mean you go out and throw pamphlets at people in parking lots and tell them what to do with their lives. No. That's not even Buddhism. Nietzsche makes it clear, so does Shakyamuni, but in a more colorful and maybe obfuscated form to us modern people. That's why I'm here making this resource, right? But Nietzsche makes it clear. He says, emulate me. He doesn't say, follow me. He says, do as I do. That's a leader. Because he understands leadership has a great deal to do with being the first example, the exemplar, and a great deal of letting go. And by letting go, what I mean is, here's something fabulous. I want to show it to you. But the moment I show it to you, I need to let that be yours. That's the key to leadership. Because now it's on you to emulate, to self-motivate, to discover your insights. My insights aren't that important. They're only important is that I share them with you and they inspire you to look within yourself to find your insights. That's the job of a bodhisattva. That's the kind of leader that acts as a support, selflessly supporting, right? Because it's not about me. It's about the Dharma. Everything a true leader does is in service to the Dharma. Did Nietzsche write all of his remonstrations and letters to leaders and kings and, you know, powerful, the elite, because he wanted to show off? Because he wanted to show his followers? We need a different word for that, don't we? Because that's not accurate. He didn't want to show off. He didn't want to flex, whatever words you want to use. He didn't do it to say, hey, me, Nietzsche, I'm important. No, Nietzsche was doing everything in his life in service to the Dharma. See, the true leader doesn't see herself or himself as the top of the pyramid. You may be at the helm, right? But the bow of the boat is aiming at the Dharma. You may be steering, but if you're not steering with the goal of your ship headed to, these are analogies from Buddhism, the other shore. You're never going to get there. And your goal should be the other shore. Never, I'm sailing the ship. Look at me. You guys, you row. Well, they're much more likely to row if they know they're getting themselves to the other shore. Not because you have such a wonderful demeanor or that you're in charge. See, it's a very different picture of leadership, isn't it? It's, what do we say in North America, the cliche? Lead by example. Yes, lead by example, but understand that your example isn't you being an example of yourself or of leadership. What you're an example of is the dedication to the goal, which is much more vast than your efforts. The better your efforts, the better an example you are to those who are equally trying to do and reach the same goal. There is no pyramid. And in that way, we all need to be leaders for ourselves and exemplars to one another. Right? If that's not the structure you see in any group that you're in, then I advise you to pull away and investigate your own needs, right? Do you need to be told what to do? That's different than sharing experiences, right? Don't be authoritarian. Don't look for someone to tell you what to do. Look for someone to share with. Look for somebody who may have insights that will help you achieve your own. That's fine. It may seem like a subtle difference, but it's a critical difference. Okay? That's Buddhist practice. All right. That's my spiel on leadership. Now, let's get back to chapter 19. Furthermore, O Bodhisattva Perseverance, those sons and daughters of a virtuous family who preserve, recite, explain, and copy the sutra will attain 800 qualities of the body. Their bodies will be as pure as clear lapis lazuli, and sentient beings will gladly look upon them. Because of this purity of the body, remember what purity means, getting rid of all the obstacles, the obfuscations, the habits, the craving, the clinging, right? Once your body is sailing through space and time in its momentum, moment to moment to moment, rather than dragging eons of past data and identification, suddenly freed, right? Everything will appear therein. The sentient beings in the great manifold cosmos, when they are born or die, whether they are superior or inferior, whether they are fair or ugly, whether they are good or bad, states of being, the mountain kings such as Mount Kakravada, Mount Mahakarakravada, Mount Meru or Mount Mahameru, as well as all the sentient beings who dwell there, will all appear in their body. All those who dwell down as far as the lowest hell and up as high as the summit of the universe will appear in their body. Wherever those Sravakas, Pratyekabuddhas, Bodhisattvas, or Buddhas are, the Buddhas teach the Dharma and appear with their physical images in their body. Their physical images in their body. What does all of that sound like? Doesn't it sound like what I'm constantly saying when you realize moment to moment energies manifesting, that there really is no separation at that level of you, me, the earth, the sun, the moon. We're all in the same process, the same stuff. Then isn't that like saying that all of these things appear in you? Isn't that the same mentation? Remember, Buddhism is about the mind. And what do you think Buddha is going to do now, wanting to elaborate on the meaning of this further spoken verse? With that, I think we'll come to the end of this video. Their bodies are extremely poor. Pure. He's talking about having attained awakening. Our bodies are extremely pure. Liberated, right? From the baggage. Like clear lapis lazuli, all those sentient beings who preserve the Lotus Sutra will gladly look upon them, just as all physical images reflect in a mirror. Right? Nichiren uses that analogy a lot. No, the exterior world to your samsaric self is a mirror. It's not something else. It's you in other forms. Or more accurately, your form is no different. We're all part of the same engine. The bodhisattvas will see in their own bodies everything in this world, every atom. They alone can see it, while no one else does, because it's an experience of the sentient mind, yes? All those sentient beings, devas, humans, asuras, hell dwellers, hungry ghosts, or animals in the manifold cosmos, will also appear in this body with their physical images, right? This is potential. All potential, all the time. How you manifest from that potential is up to you to experience and to influence or be influenced. All the heavenly palaces, which reach as high as the top of the universe, Mount Kakravala, Mount Meru, Mount Mahameru, and the oceans will appear in their bodies. Those Buddhas, Shravakas, or Bodhisattvas, heirs of the Buddhas, who are neither alone or who teach the Dharma to the assembly, will appear in their body. Even though they have not attained the Dharma body, which is subtle and without corruption, everything in this world will appear in their pure physical bodies. Now, somebody asked me about this last night. What's the difference, right? They use, in this translation, they use the word divine. That has a lot of charisma attached to it. But quite simply, he's doing it here again. He's saying they haven't attained the Dharma body, but they have created or attained a pure physical body. What do you think that means? So Buddha or Buddha-ness is the state of the universe, the cosmos. It is the engine of life. But does the engine of life look around and go, "Hey, Bob, how's it going?" No, because that's a samsaric thing happening, right? So, very simply, the Dharma body, the experience of enlightenment, is only experienced in the physical samsaric body. So, as bodhisattvas, that term bodhisattva basically says Buddha in samsara, which is where we experience Buddha-ness with our sentient mind. But to be fully integrated with the engine of life is to be not physical. To be, right, the process of life is karma. It's the formation, not the form. It takes form, and that's why we call it karma, because that's what we deal with in the physical world. But before its physical form, it's the potential and formations. That's Buddha. To become aware of that moment to moment is Buddha-ness in our physical form. That's what a bodhisattva is aiming or practicing to experience. Right? And this is where the differences are seen in nirvana. Because on the one hand, in samsara, a bodhisattva detaches or liberates from craving and clinging, but the body's still here, still physically existing. So that would be a release from the baggage and yet still in physical form for the benefit of others, right? Like a leader who has the goal of the Dharma, not only for oneself, but for the enlightenment of all sentient beings. See, that goal is much larger than self. Or you might say that self is all-inclusive of the cosmos. Yeah? That is the bodhisattva goal. That's what we're achieving with our practice. And then once we're extinct, no longer physical, all the consciousnesses, no longer has an apparatus in order to instantiate him, then we just become part of the engine of potential, the quiescent energy of potential. And so if you want to identify what is Buddha, well, there's two ways you can go. Buddha, to a sentient being, is the experience, the aha, the renge, the witnessing, the understanding of everything in the cosmos happening moment to moment, perceiving that energetic moment-to-moment instantiation, very egalitarian, yeah? Everything's doing it. That would be Buddhahood or Buddha-ness, an experience of the mind. But Buddha is always going on. Buddha is the very potential to manifest or not. That's not a consciousness. That's just a process. To become aware of it and to experience it, that's our precious, very small window of time to experience. Right? And to manifest in our mind as much as possible in this lifetime. Why? Well, certainly to help others, but to enjoy, to be amazed by, and slough off all of that baggage of habit energy that samsara wants us to, oh, we made it here, let's get more, let's get more, let's get more. I mean, okay, that's how we got here, but that doesn't mean that's the reason we're alive. The reason we have conscious minds, if you're looking for a reason, a purpose, it's simply to be amazed, enjoy, share, and lead others to this experience. That's the biggie. That's the purpose. That's what Bodhisattva practice gives us all of that, makes us aware of all of that. What could be a higher purpose than that? All right. So thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Certainly take a few seconds just to like and subscribe. It's a Bodhisattva act because it helps to grow this Sangha, this resource. Yeah. And if you can do a little more and you're able to, via an ebook or book, or simply go to Patreon or PayPal, donate. All of us benefit from it, but I certainly am tremendously grateful because it's the only way I can keep going to build this resource, you know, until I'm extinct. And then I don't know how long it'll stay on YouTube. The website will probably be up for a good long time. I don't have an heir. You know, I'd have to make an application. Oh, anyway, who I will bequeath all of these this resource to, I have no idea. No one in mind. No one is knocking at the door to do so. So I don't know why I got off on that track. But anyway, I'm just really, really grateful for your guys' support. Take care of your health. Right? That's a kindness you certainly can afford to do for yourself. And because you influence others for them too. And I'll see you in the next one. I'll just keep doing these. There seems to be no end of material. So let me know your thoughts if there's something especially that you'd like to find out more about. And I will answer your questions. Bye for now.